My name is Natalia DeGravel. It is October 4th, 2015, 10:53 a.m., and I am here in Cabin John, Maryland, interviewing Asha Simone. Asha, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Glad to hear that. So, my first question for you would be, what brought you to the U.S.?
My husband. Mm-hmm. I met him in Thailand, and I was working at a school there, and we met, and decided we were going to get married, and so he was the reason, because he's an American citizen. Right.
And when did you meet him?
I met him 7 years ago.
7 years ago, okay. So what brought you to Thailand?
Work. I was looking to relocate from South Africa, and mm-hmm. My sister was a teacher in Thailand, and introduced me to a new school that had just opened up there. So I decided to leave South Africa and pursue a new career.
Okay. So were you born in South Africa?
I was born in South Africa.
And where in South Africa?
In Durban, on the East Coast.
Okay. And when, if you don't mind me asking, were you born?
In 1966.
1966. Mm-hmm. So that was around the time of apartheid?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah, apartheid was definitely happening around that time, but I left South Africa just as the transition was happening in South Africa, the end of apartheid, that era.
Okay, so what was it like growing up in South Africa during that era?
The truth is, I just didn't really know that things were like different in other parts of the world. We just grew up knowing that everything was separate in South Africa, so that's mm-hmm. Those were the rules that we learned to follow. And until I got a little older, and a lot of the news was censored in South Africa, the newspapers as well. So I didn't really have a really good sense of, like, this doesn't sound right. To me, I just thought that was, like, happening all over in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got older and started understanding, like, we have separate seats to sit at. You know, when you go to the train station, you can't take the first class train, even though you have the money to buy the ticket, or you couldn't go to certain beaches because there were beaches for black people and white people, or whites and non-whites. So that got me thinking a lot.
Okay. So what part of South Africa specifically were you born in?
I was born in Durban, but lived in a little town called Bedlam, which is in KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay. And in your experience, or from your experience, was apartheid particularly different around Durban? In Durban, were there, you know, specific or unique, I guess, details that you noticed growing up in Durban?
Well, the biggest thing I noticed was, like, schools were segregated. Mm-hmm. So I went to an Indian school, and there were, you know, black children who went to schools more in rural areas where they lived, and then, you know, white students went to white schools. So we never really integrated that way. There were no school activities where you visited a white school or a black school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I noticed. Also, just the beaches, that was like a really big thing for us, because we loved going to the beach, but there were signs for non-whites and white beaches. So obviously the nice, beautiful beaches were assigned to the white people, and we just had beaches that we could go to that were for non-whites.
Okay.
So growing up, those were some of the things that I noticed.
Okay. And how did that make you feel as a kid, you know, noticing that there were segregated beaches or other things?
As a kid, I was actually okay with it, because that's what we grew up with. But as I got older and became more aware of the inequality, then I kind of, you know, started to question it a little. But I have to say, like, my parents were real rule followers, and so mm-hmm. were we growing up. So we were not one of those rebel kind of families that were,
right.
You know, those who did. I did have friends in my school whose families didn't agree with that, and they were more vocal about it. And those were the families who were under house arrest.
Under house arrest.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So did you have any siblings then, or do you have any siblings?
I do. I have an older sister and a younger sister and a brother who still lives in South Africa.
Okay. Do your other sisters, do they live in South Africa still?
My younger sister is a fashion designer, lives in Cape Town in South Africa, and my brother has works and lives there as well. My older sister lives in Thailand, and I'm here.
Okay. So how old were you when you left South Africa?
I was in my 20s.
Your 20s. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what influenced you to leave South Africa?
I was going through a divorce at that time, and as I mentioned, my sister was already living overseas in Thailand, and she suggested to me, like, hey, why don't you come to Thailand? There's a new school opening, and maybe you can just start fresh, start life over again. Mm-hmm. And I had Shanice at the time. She was like 3.5 years old. So I decided to just go to Thailand just kind of on a holiday and just look at it and take a look at the school. So I left Shanice with my parents and went to Thailand for about a month, visited the school, interviewed with the head of the school. They liked me and they were really happy to know that Shanice was a native English speaker. Right. So they offered me a job and I came back to South Africa and told my parents that I'm going to leave and take Shanice with me. And the school arranged my visa and all of that. And so I packed up and left and stayed with my sister for a little while and then, you know, got my own apartment and started school with Shanice.
Mm-hmm. Just for the sake of the interview, could you describe who Shanice is?
Okay, so Shanice is my daughter. Mm-hmm. She's 23 years old. Her father was is South African as well. He's now remarried, living in London. He was a policeman in South Africa, so it was really a very difficult time, especially when the transition was happening. So we got divorced when she was about 3 years old, and I felt like having an opportunity to come overseas might be really good for her as well. Mm-hmm. So that was another reason why I decided to, when I got this opportunity at the school, I decided to take Shanice with me once I got to check out everything. And, you know, just have her start a brand new life in Thailand as well.
Okay. So was Shanice primarily educated in Thailand?
Yes, she was.
Okay.
She worked at the three different international schools that I worked at. So every school I worked at, she was able to attend that school. And that was great for me because she got a tuition waive at every school that I worked at. So she got a great education and I didn't have to pay too much money for it.
Right. So in terms of your own education, where were you educated for university?
Okay, so I went to a primary school in Verulam, in my little town where I was living. High school was a couple miles away from my primary school. And then when I finished school, I went to a technical college. It was called the ML Sultan Technical College. Did a course there and got work as a personal assistant in Durban and worked there for a couple of years and then went back to night school and studied and worked on my credentials. And then when I heard this opportunity was coming up in Thailand, I did a ESL course and that kind of helped me get my foot in the door to work in international school because I got certified in ESL. And then when I moved to Thailand, worked and then saved my money and then went to summer school every year and just worked on my credentials until I got my MA in education.
Okay. And ESL is English as a second language?
Yes.
Okay. So did you grow up speaking English?
I grew up speaking English, Afrikaans, Zulu.
Wow. So would you consider yourself fluent in all three?
No, I would say fluent. Obviously, English is my second language, but I could get by speaking and understanding some Afrikaans, which is very much like German.
Okay.
Zulu, we had workers. My dad had some workers, a driver, and someone helping him at home to clean the yard. So our gardener, our maid as well was Zulu. So in order to communicate with them, we needed to learn the language. So I could speak and understand some of it, but I wouldn't say I'm fluent in it.
Right.
And then a little bit of Hindi because my parents were, when they didn't want us to understand them, they would speak in Hindi, but we learned some Hindi after school, so I kind of got a grasp of that as well.
Okay, so which did you speak at home growing up?
Growing up, we spoke in English.
In English. Mm-hmm. And would you say that growing up, learning to speak these languages influenced your own cultural identity as a kid?
Yes, definitely. Like, I'm a fourth generation Indian from India. I don't know which part of India we came from, but basically our ancestors came to South Africa, were brought to South Africa to as indentured laborers to plant sugarcane. And but they brought all the customs and cultures with them. So, you know, my mom dressed in a sari every day and we followed the religious celebrations. Like Diwali is a huge celebration that it's kind of like Christmas, but we call it Diwali. It's a festival of lights. my parents, you know, my mom cooked Indian food. We attend weddings that are all very traditional. And, you know, we grew up a little more on the Western side, but my mom was very traditional.
Okay. And how many generations of your family were living in South Africa?
Three by then.
Yeah. So did you stay closely connected to your extended family, like your grandparents, cousins?
Yes, very closely. We lived, when we were little, lived with my grandparents, my paternal grandparents. Mm-hmm. So we were very close to them. We have a huge extended family in South Africa. But I wish I had talked with my grandmother more as I got older to understand more about our roots, because you know, I would love to go back to India one day and find out where we came from. But all I know from them, like there were seven ships that left from different parts of India, and our ancestors were on one of those ships, and they were brought to South Africa. So I don't know a lot of our back history.
Okay. So when you say you're fourth generation Indian, is that on your maternal or paternal side?
I think it's from both sides.
From both sides. Yeah. Okay. So both of your parents are Indian?
Yes.
Okay. So in terms of culture shock, mm-hmm. was there any culture shock when you moved from South Africa to Thailand?
Yes. I think my sister made it really... the transition, she made it really easy for me, because I learned to speak, I call it taxi Thai. If I would get into a taxi, mm-hmm. just to, you know, tell the driver where I needed to go, that was a little easier for me. She did make some parts, like living with her, and she kind of showed me the ropes of, you know, living in Thailand, what it was like. So she made it easy for me, but some things were hard. For example, when I went to the new school, one of the teachers said to me, "Don't ever tell the parents you are divorced." And I said, "Why?" And she was like, "Well, this is the Thai Chinese school, and they don't really like it if you know they know you are divorced, so you should keep that a secret." And I was like, "Well, I left South Africa to start a new life. Right. I don't want any secrets, you know." Being dark-skinned, I have to say that was one of the things that was a bit of a culture shock to me, because in Thailand, not everyone, but a lot of the people feel like having light skin is, you are beautiful if you have mm-hmm. light skin. So Shanice is dark skinned, and so am I. And I found out, like, when she was at school, she was having she didn't have a lot of friends. And, you know, she was in kindergarten, and I was a kindergarten teacher as well, but she wasn't in my class. And I would ask her every day, "So, darling, how was your day?" And she said, "I don't really have any friends." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Nobody likes to play with me." And so I talked to some of the kids in her classroom, because I knew them, and we would be all mm-hmm. on the playground together and, you know, hang out with them. And they said to me, so they called me teacher, and they said, "Teacher, you need to wash Shanice with soap." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Because her skin, it's brown, and it's dirty." And I said, "It's not dirty. It's actually, that's the color of our skin." And they said, "And you should tell her to drink white milk, because, you know, she drinks chocolate milk every day, and that makes her skin brown." So these poor kids, these mm-hmm. Asian children, were kind of being raised that way. And I think parents wanted them to drink white milk. Right. So they just told them, "Don't drink chocolate milk. It's going to make your skin brown." And so the kids just felt like Shanice's skin color was a problem. Mm-hmm. For some reason, mine, it wasn't a problem to them, because they would love to hold my hand and hang out with me. But Shanice was little, and they just isolated her a bit. And so she would just, you know, play by herself most of the time, until I sat down with the kids and I basically talked to them. And I said, "She's not dirty. This is the color of our skin." And so eventually she got more friends, which was nice, but she always grew up with this complex that she mm-hmm. wasn't beautiful, because we spent 15 years in Thailand, right. So she basically was a teenager there. Right. And she always felt that she was not beautiful, because her lighter skin friends always got compliments from other people. And some of the things that happened to us, like we would go into a store looking to buy a moisturizer, just a normal, regular moisturizer, and I would walk in and... the sales assistant in the store would come to us and say, "You should take this one. It's a skin lightener. It'll make your skin white. And, you know, white is so beautiful." And we would be like, "No, we're actually not looking for a skin mm-hmm. lightener. We just want a moisturizer, and we're going to have dry skin." And so they would constantly try to sell us products that was going to, like, make our skin white.
Right.
So those were the kind of things that... for me, it was a huge culture shock, right. I think. There were, like, really nice people in Thailand as well, you know. I was kind of like a single parent there, so they were really nice and caring and loving and, you know, genuinely concerned about us. But then there were other people who just made us feel really not good about ourselves.
So was that definitely an ideology you saw projected throughout the country, throughout, like, the culture as a whole?
As a whole, I would say yes. Just if you are dark-skinned in Thailand, generally, it's not everyone, but generally you are perceived as not beautiful and, oh, what a shame your skin is dark. And you are, it's kind of like the mentality in India where you have darker skin and then you have more menial jobs to do. Mm-hmm. If you are darker skin, you are not considered beautiful. But if you are lighter skin, then it's easier for you to find a husband. And, you know, you may not be so intelligent, but if you are light skin, it's like, oh, you are so beautiful. So, yeah, I know that that happens in India a lot. It's like with the caste system and all of that. And coming to Thailand, I'm going to say, yes, it was kind of a similar mentality. Mm-hmm.
Did you have experiences with that? Have you ever visited India?
No, yourself? I've never been to India. I would love to go.
Okay. So I guess then, as Shanice grew up, do you think you were more aware of that or she was?
I think both of us, well, as she got older, I think both of us became much more aware of it in Thailand. She didn't really, you know, she was very little in South Africa, so I don't think she really felt that difference there. But coming to Thailand, I would say as she got older, especially when she became a teenager, I think she really became aware and self-conscious of it.
Mm-hmm. And do you see any parallels between that and growing up during apartheid in South Africa?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I said, coming from India, it was the same mentality about light skin and dark skin. Right. So in South Africa as well, you know, people would say like, Asha is such a nice person. It's a pity she's dark skin. You know, I would hear comments like that, like, oh, she's really nice and friendly, but what a shame, you know, she's dark skin.
Right. And so, how would you react to comments like that?
You know, when I was little, it actually really hurt me.
Uh-huh.
I used to actually cry about it because my older sister is lighter skinned, lighter than I am. And my mom is very light skinned and my dad was on the darker side.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, whenever my sister and I fought with each other, she would always call me Blackie. So that was my name that she teased me with, you know, and I would like cry about it and just lock myself in the room and like feel so upset and hurt, you know, and so we would fight back and forth with each other. And as I got older, I said to her one day, you are going to marry someone who's black, who's dark skinned.
Right.
You know, that was my way of getting back with her. And then when she was in high school, the love of her life was a dark skinned boy. And that was like my, you know, revenge with her, like, ha ha ha, you have a dark skinned boyfriend now.
Mm-hmm.
They never got married, but it was just, you know, they could have ended up together, but it was just, I kind of felt like I had the last laugh with her because then she got a dark-skinned boyfriend.
Right. Okay. Do you think that you were perceived here, you know, differently than you were perceived in Thailand or in South Africa?
Not really. I mean, when I first joined my school, like where I'm working at now, there was a conference that came up, the People of Color Conference, and so one of the teachers, a teacher of color, invited me to join the conference, and I was like, yeah, great. I didn't know what it was. It was in Philadelphia, so I was like, great, I get to go to Philadelphia and attend the conference, and I did, and it was a conference where there were people of color, and, you know, I could relate to some of the things that they were talking about, but it was my first year in the U.S., so I kind of was just feeling my way around, you know. So I kind of, you know, feel like, yeah, I am a person of color. I identify with that. But I don't feel, I guess, at my school, I don't really see a big distinction about it because I think everyone's more self-conscious and aware about it. There's a lot of emphasis on equity and diversity at my school. So I'm not feeling the same as I did in South Africa or in Thailand.
Okay. And where are you working now?
I'm working at a private school. It's called St. Patrick's Episcopal Day School.
Okay. And are you teaching there?
I used to teach. I was a kindergarten teacher for the last 5 years at the school, and I just transitioned this year into admissions. So I am now the Associate Director of Admissions and Financial Aid at St. Patrick's.
Okay. So what are some of the major differences between teaching primary education here or working in primary education here and in Thailand?
Well, first of all the kids that I've dealt with here are native English speakers, which is great. In Thailand, the biggest difference was I worked at three different international schools, but a lot of the schools didn't have very international students. Mm-hmm. The students were mostly half and half, like they may have had a Thai dad or a Chinese dad and a mom who was, it was mostly the foreign kids were mostly, parents were white, French, Italian, Spanish, mm-hmm. American, British. Moms were mostly Asian, Thai, or Chinese. So a lot of the kids were raised half and half. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them spoke Thai at home because they had nannies or au pairs who were Asian. So the kids I came worked with were mostly non-native English speakers. And in my first year of teaching, I was just a brand new teacher, teaching kindergarten, and I didn't realize that the level of them not understanding me, like the English that I spoke, was so great. You know, I just assumed almost like three quarters of what I was saying to them, I thought they would understand me. And I had a Thai teaching assistant in my classroom, and she would sometimes translate for me. But I'm just going to share one story with you because it was okay. So funny. There was a little boy in my class, and he asked a lot of why questions, or, you know, always questioning mm-hmm. why. Anyway, so at one time I had taught the whole day, and I was with the class for almost the whole day, and, you know, I said something, and he was like, why, and I explained it, and then I said something else, and then he asked why again, and I explained why, and by the end of it, you know, when he kept going why, at the end of the day, I said to him, Wei, because I'm the boss and I said so. And I was quite frustrated by that time. And so he sat down on his chair and then he raised his hand and I was like, yes, Wei. And he goes, teacher, what means boss? And that blew me away. I just laughed out loud and I was like, oh my goodness, these poor kids. They probably don't understand anything right. that I'm saying. And I just said boss, and he was the only one who actually had the guts to raise his hand and ask me, what does boss mean, you know? And so I laughed about it. And then I, you know, asked my teaching assistant to translate to him. But then I decided, you know, I had to step back and take it a little slower with the kids. And mm-hmm. I was a brand new teacher and I just needed to learn, like, gosh, these children are not really understanding what you are saying. So I was trying to avoid speaking like pidgin English to the kids. I really right. just wanted to speak proper English with them. And I, at the beginning of the year, I learned to say in Thai, I do not speak Thai. So my teaching assistant taught me to say, Bu Thai Mai Dai. That means I do not speak Thai. Mm-hmm. So it was forcing the kids to like speak in English to me. They needed to go to the bathroom. They needed to raise a hand and say, I need to go to the bathroom, please, and not mm-hmm. say it to me in Thai. So I was trying to kind of encourage them to speak proper English, but I just realized like they were so little and I just needed to take a couple steps back, not even a step back,
right.
to try and make sure they could understand what I was saying to them. So that was a big learning curve for mm-hmm. me, I think.
So by the time those kids were in kindergarten, is what you taught, how much English had they generally had? How much English education?
Not much. So kindergarten, a lot of them just kind of entered the school either in pre-K or kindergarten. So I would say the level of English, a lot of them had to go for after-school classes to learn more English, and some of them had one-on-one instruction. Some were pretty good. They caught on quite easily.
Right.
But, I mean, by the time they finished, by the time they got to grade 12, they could speak and understand English really well. Mm-hmm. But it was a slow process for them. So that, for me, that was the biggest difference coming here and talking to kids and them knowing, you know, what I was saying, like, the first time. Right. Like, I would call a lot of the students darling, and they didn't know what darling meant. One time, a kid asked me, like, excuse me, teacher, what means darling, you know? And I was like, wow, okay, that's pretty amazing. So here it's different, you mm-hmm. know, the kids get it. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So what language is spoken primarily in Thailand?
In Thailand, Thai, I would say, is the first language. And then there are a lot of Chinese in Thailand. So I would say Thai, Chinese, there are a lot of Cambodians now living and working in Thailand as well, Burmese. So yeah, I would say basically those languages, and then now English is, you know, much more popular now in Thailand. So at least, you know, taxi drivers, a lot of them can understand some English.
Right.
So I think I would include English in it as well. Right.
So as you lived, I guess, as you spent more time in Thailand, did you find yourself more comfortable communicating to your students in Thai, or was it still primarily in English?
Definitely in English. All I learned was taxi Thai, and I wasn't really interested to really learn the language. I wish I had learned a little more, but then it just forced my students to communicate with me in English. But there were a lot of foreign teachers who went to Thailand, and they just went native and like got a Thai boyfriend and got to like learn the language and speak, communicate with the kids back and forth in Thai, which was, the kids loved that. But I felt it is a very tonal language, and you know, you can say a word in Thai that could have the two opposite meanings. For example, you could say you are beautiful in Thai. You could say beautiful is, I'm not even sure if I'm going to say this correctly, but it's suai, that means beautiful. Or you could say suai, and that could mean ugly. So you could say to someone you are really beautiful, but if you don't say it in the proper way, you could say you are really ugly. So
it can get confusing.
I had no interest in learning Thai, even though I was there for such a long time. I just felt my job forced me, you know, for the kids to speak in English with me, and I didn't really learn it.
Right. Sorry, could you spell that word for me? How do you spell suai?
S-U-A-Y, I'm guessing, but if you Google it, you might try it. That would be interesting for you to see the different way that it's
said. Yeah. So have you had any similar experiences in terms of lapse in communication between you and your students here in the U.S.?
No, not really. I think the language is amazing, man. I think the kids are pretty... you know, they all speak and understand English. There are a couple kids who speak Spanish, who are Hispanic kids at the school, but I think the level of English is pretty high, so I don't think I've come across any of those kinds of issues.
Right. So do the kids that go to your school now, do they pick up very quickly on the fact that you're not a native-born American?
I guess my accent is more British, so like a lot of the parents and students think I was born or studied in England. But for the students that I come into contact with, usually when, you know, in the first few weeks of school, we talk about ourselves, and so I would normally share my background with them by the first week of school. So a lot of the students that I've interacted with already know about my background, and then there are other students that I may not have interacted with at the beginning of the school year. Different classes have different projects, and they come around the school and interview people. So this year I was one of the people who got interviewed, and of the 5 kids who came to interview me, 3 of them were my former students, so they already knew a lot of information about me, but the other 2 I hadn't taught, so they had learned something new about me.
And do you introduce your cultural background to the kids at the beginning of the school year? Is that something that you usually bring up with them?
Yeah, we normally do that at back-to-school night with all the parents. Okay. So I team-taught with another teacher, so we would normally just give them background information about ourselves. And then by the first week of school, we would share, each child would get to share about themselves, and then the teachers would share as well. So it's like we wouldn't give them a whole lot of information just on the first day or second day, but during the course of the week, just more information about ourselves. And then as questions would arise in class, or if there was a book that I was reading and it had to do with about India, or the kids were looking at pictures in a book and we were talking about Diwali, and they would say, "Look, Mrs. Simone, this person looks like you." Or, you know, and I would be like, "Yeah, that's someone who's Indian, but I've never been to India, but I am Indian." Right. And so we look the same, and, you know, so they could make connections and I could relate to it.
So what influenced you to want to become a teacher?
That's a very good question. I never thought I would be a teacher. And when I was in South Africa, when my sister was communicating with me back and forth, she came home once on holiday, and I was actually, my neighbor needed some help in school, and her mom had got her report card, and the mom just said to me, like, oh, she didn't do so well, and I really, can you just help her when you are doing your homework? Can you just sit down and work with her a little bit? So I would sit with this girl, and I would do my homework and help her, and we would chit-chat and talk about her homework. And so I kind of tutored her for a while. And when she got her next report card, she also got an award for the most improved student. So her parents were so excited about it, and my sister heard about it, and she was like, oh my goodness, you will make a fantastic teacher. I really think you should consider teaching. So I said, oh, I don't think so. And so she, my sister was the one who like convinced me. She just said, I think you'll make a fantastic teacher and you should do it. And so I was like, okay, maybe I'll just give it a try. And so that's when it all came together, when I decided to move to Thailand.
Okay. So in terms of teaching certification, were you able to use the one that you had gotten in South Africa directly in Thailand?
Oh, definitely. The ESL certificate that I got actually opened up the door for me to work at my first school because I had the ESL certificate, which was teaching English as a second language. And while I was working at the school, I decided to do a Montessori course. So that was through the Montessori school in London. So I would work all year, and then over the summer I could do these courses, some online, and I had a mentor who was from South Africa actually. And so during the course of the year, there were assignments that I had to work on that would be a case study of a student. So I could actually observe a student in my classroom and maybe observe him and make little observation notes and add that to my assignment questions and then mail it to my mentor, who would look at it and give me feedback. So back and forth, I would the coursework, and then when I got that certification, it was great because then that enabled me to actually be a classroom teacher, because at the beginning I had to be an assistant teacher until I got that Montessori certification that enabled me to work as a lead teacher in the classroom. And then thereafter I just kept going, like studying every summer and just working on my credentials.
So then were you able to take that certificate and translate directly to teaching in the U.S.? Or did you have to get a new one when you came to the U.S.?
I think when you work at a private school, I had my MA in education already. And by the time I left Thailand, I had 15 years of teaching experience. So when I came to the U.S. at the private school, I didn't need to update anything except to attend more professional development opportunities, which the school provided.
Okay. What year did you come to the U.S.?
I came, in 2008, I think.
Okay. So did you start off working as a teacher at St. Patrick's?
Yes, as a kindergarten teacher for 5 years until my transition this year.
Okay, this year. So what did your journey to the U.S. look like? How was it for you?
My transition was actually good because JP, my husband, was already here. He left Thailand 6 months earlier to come back to the U.S. And find a place to rent and kind of set up our new home here. I finished up my contract. I had 6 more months to finish my contract, and Shanice was going to graduate that year as well, so it all worked out really well. My transition was not difficult at all because I came the spring before. I came just to visit, got to see where we'll be living, and I got to actually go to the school and interview at the school because I didn't have a job yet, and I was just looking at different opportunities here, and St. Patrick's was one of the schools that I walked into and met the head of the school and talked about what I was doing in Thailand and that I was going to be moving, and left my CV with them, and they were going to look it over, and if there were any openings, let me know. And so I got to come and visit around D.C. It was perfect timing. I came around the cherry blossom time. So that was really beautiful. And so I think JP planned that really well, that I came and I had a holiday. And then it was really, the weather was really great here. And when I went back to Thailand to just finish up my contract, while I was there, I found out that I'm going to have a job already, that there was a vacancy here. So that made everything so much easier for me, the transition to just leave. The thing that was most heartbreaking for me leaving Thailand was all of my friends that I met, you know, over the 15 years that I was there. And then my sister, who still lives in Thailand. So almost every weekend, Shanice and I spent our time with her and her family. So that was the hardest part for me, just leaving, saying goodbye to them and my friends, and then coming here to kind of start all over again.
Would you say you have a stronger connection to South Africa or to Thailand?
Gosh, that's really hard to say, because I feel like I was born and raised in South Africa, and all my family, most of my family still live there. But then I spent 15 years out of South Africa just in Thailand, and my sister and her family, just we were family there as well. So I kind of feel loyal to both places. If I had to pick one, that would be really hard for me.
Right. So did you raise Shanice, taking her to, not Thailand, South Africa frequently? Did she grow up visiting, you know, family in South Africa?
Yes, we, in whenever it was a holiday in over the summer in Thailand, I would fly back to South Africa so she could spend time with her cousins and her grandparents and reconnect with them. But it was really hard for her because she left when she was so little, so she always felt like she didn't really fit in South Africa. You know, she wouldn't understand the jokes that my cousins would say, or they laughed at something and she couldn't get it. And it was the South African lingo that they talked, and sometimes they would speak in slang and she didn't understand the slang. So I would say for me it was an easy transition, because going back and forth I was able to adapt. For Shanice it was harder.
Right.
A lot of her cousins felt like they would ask me, like, why does she speak like that? And she speaks with a very American accent. And so they felt like she was showing off when she talked. And it was, she had mostly American teachers when she was in Thailand, so at all the international schools. So she just picked up that kind of accent when she talked. So I would say for me, my transition was easier. I think for Shanice, it was much harder. She kind of had to become like a chameleon and just blend.
Right. You
know, when she was in South Africa, just become a little more South African and learn the South African-isms. And then when she was back in Thailand, it was different.
Right. And then in terms of coming to the US, do you think it was easier for you to transition or for Shanice to transition?
Definitely for me. I think I had a much easier transition, just because JP was already here and he had set up our apartment. And, you know, I just sent my shipment through and then had boxes to unpack and had all my things that I wanted near me. For Shanice, it was a whole new ballgame for her. She just, I think she had a very, very difficult transition, and I didn't know until a few years ago when we sat down and talked, and she just told me how hard everything was. She just felt like a lot of the students that she, in her first year of college that she was with, a lot of them didn't have passports. They had never traveled. And so she felt very, she didn't feel like she fitted in the group.
Right.
She shared a dorm room with a student who was homeschooled. So she, you know, they were just on two different wavelengths. And so I think that aspect for Shanice was very, very difficult. And I was brand new at my new school and I had just moved to the US. And I didn't think, when she first went to college, I didn't think I could ask for permission to take leave from school and go help set her up in her dorm room and be with her for a little while. I didn't know that that was allowed. I just felt like I was new, starting a new job. I couldn't ask for time off. We had just started school. And so she was kind of left to fend for herself. And later I found out when she chatted with me, she was like, oh, Mom, you know, all the other parents came and they had made up the beds for their kids and they went shopping and they bought stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, I just felt like a little lost. You were not there. And so I really felt for her. I just thought that was really, on my part, I wasn't thinking ahead for her. I just kind of settled myself in and thought she was going to be okay. It was not okay.
Did you raise her to be very independent?
You know, yes and no. As an Indian parent, I always had her close to me. And, you know, it was, for most of the time, it was just the two of us. Until my husband came into the picture, and being American, and he had a different mindset about having Shanice to be a little more free and, you know, not to treat, be like the typical Indian mother that mm-hmm. I was. So he would always encourage me to, you know, let her go out and be with her friends and try new things. And so I became much more open-minded with him guiding me with that. That was something new for me. Sorry, what was your question again? I'm so distracted with the noise. Lewis, you need to be a little less noisy, please.
Oh, it's no problem. It was just how independent did you raise Shanice?
Okay, so now I think she's much more independent now that she's in college and she's just, you know, I'm here and she's in Milwaukee and I think she's becoming much more independent and I'm trying to kind of cut off those apron strings.
Right. Where did she first go to school when you moved? Sorry, I'm getting a cold. Where did she first go to school when you moved here?
Okay, so she went to school in Milwaukee mm-hmm. at the at Marquette University.
Okay.
So she was offered a partial scholarship when she finished her school in Thailand and applied to different places here in the U.S. Marquette was one of the schools that offered her a scholarship. So she went to Marquette for a year, but after a year, she just felt that was not a good fit for her. Right. It was a Jesuit university, and she just felt like a fish out of water. So she, after a year, we decided it might be best for her to take a year off and just work and travel and mm-hmm. do something other than being at school. So that's what she did for a year. She tried to be very independent then, find a job. She did waitressing and babysitting and a whole lot of other things and, you know, paid her rent and tried to manage on her own for that year until she re-enrolled and decided to go to the University of Milwaukee in Wisconsin.
Okay, and is she liking that a lot more?
Yes, definitely.
So, how would you describe your perceptions of the U.S. before moving here?
Gosh, first of all, I thought I was going to retire in Thailand. I never really thought I was going to ever move here. So when I met JP and we had to decide quickly because he was going to be relocated for his job coming back to the U.S. Mm-hmm. So we had to decide what our next plans were because to get the paperwork going for a green card, it was a long, tedious procedure. So we got married and then he started with all the paperwork. What was the question again? Sorry.
Your perceptions of the U.S.
Right,
before coming.
Right, sorry. Yeah. So I had American friends at school and I had, you know, talked to them and all of that, but talking to people, it's not the same. Nothing prepares you for what, you know, you are moving to a new country and, to live. And coming to the U.S., I have to say, the one thing that was hard for me was driving on the other side of the road because in Thailand, you know, I drove around a lot and I had a car and I had to learn to practice driving on mm-hmm. the right-hand side of the road. But what was amazing for me that all the signs were in English.
Right.
And everyone communicated in English. You know, in Thailand, if I got lost, that was really hard for me because the signs were mostly in Thai. Mm-hmm. So for me, this was huge to be able to go to a store and look for something if I want to buy something or find my size. And it was so easy to go through and, you know, see all of that. And if I went to a store and, you know, signs were not in Thai, they were all in English. So if I needed to find shampoo or conditioner, I could actually read the labels and know what's what. So I think that was great, you know, to be able to, the English part of it was good.
Right. Would you say that when you first came here, as opposed to when you first moved to Thailand, it was easier or more difficult to interact with people, you know, ask people directions?
Definitely
or
here. Okay. Definitely here. Yes.
And why?
Just the language, you know, mm-hmm. I couldn't speak in Thai. All I knew was taxi Thai. So, you know, I had to always have a friend with me who could speak in Thai if I needed to go shopping, if I was looking for a specific thing. And here I could be fairly independent.
Right. So why did you choose to move to Cabanjon?
We were actually living in an apartment before this, mm-hmm. but, we felt like when we had the money that it would be great to have our own house.
Right.
And looked around online for different places and then saw that this house was up for sale and came to the neighborhood and drove around and liked what we saw mm-hmm. and decided maybe this would be a good fit. So mm-hmm. we decided to buy the house here.
Where was the apartment?
It was in downtown, in Bethesda.
Okay. So what were your first, I guess, perceptions of the DC area, you know, when you first came here?
Very international. Mm-hmm. I loved it. Like, one of the things I wanted to see was, like, to go to the White House and get photos taken there and go check out all the monuments and all of that. But I really liked DC. When I came on holiday just to visit, when it was a cherry blossom time, because I loved that time of the year, mm-hmm. it was just amazing to be here, and the whole atmosphere, it was just a nice, the weather was beautiful, and it was just a nice time to be here. You know, obviously the weather was a big shock to me. I don't know if I didn't mention that, but one of the things that, you know, I had never experienced the four seasons.
Right.
Living in Thailand, it was either two seasons, the rainy season or the hot season all mm-hmm. the time. And then coming here, suddenly I started experiencing all four seasons, and then winter. I never experienced snow. I experienced fake snow in Thailand because we had
fake
a place
snow.
The kids could go on a field trip and it was a place that was called Dream World, and they had a place that had fake snow. And, you know, so I had never really touched real snow until I came here. But JP was really good about that as well. He just, you know, took me to go get the warmest, nice down coat that mm-hmm. I could have. I think he really didn't want me to, like, really get scared of the winter here and decide, like, actually, this is not where I want to be. I think I want to go back to Thailand. So I got all the right clothes to wear and all of that. And then just, you know, now I'm okay. I mean, I know winter is coming, so getting all my warm stuff out.
Yeah. So were you living in Thailand during the tsunami? I think it was 2005.
Yes, actually, I was in South Africa at the time the tsunami happened.
Okay.
So I didn't even know it had happened on that day until we got a text message from my sister, who lives in Thailand and who was at the beach, but on the other side where it had happened. Mm-hmm. And she just sent a message to say, okay, I just want you all to know we are fine, everything's okay.
Right.
And then we were like, what is she talking about? And then we turned the news on and we just saw what was going on. And mm-hmm. at the time when we turned the news on, it was like just 600 or 700 people that they said mm-hmm. had died, until every hour by the hour it was just being updated into thousands and thousands. So yes, we were in South Africa on holiday at the time that it happened, but my sister was right there when it had happened, but she was just not like in that area.
What part of Thailand did you live in?
I lived downtown in Bangkok.
In Bangkok.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you have any stepchildren?
I do. Two, Louis and Ella. Mm-hmm. Louis just turned 16 and Ella is going to be 14 soon.
Okay. So how would you describe the process of, I guess, getting to know them?
Well, they were students at my old school in Bangkok where I worked.
Okay.
So that's where I had met JP actually at the school. So I taught Ella as in an after-school activity, so I knew her.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis was actually one of the buddy readers. His class would come into my class and read to my younger students. So I kind of had, I knew them as a teacher. I kind of knew them at the school already.
Right.
So yeah, that's how we met through the school.
Okay.
JP was actually separated at that time, and the kids were in the school that I was working at. And we met at a barbecue and then talked, and, mm-hmm. and then I realized that he was going through a divorce and all of that.
Right. And how was it for Shanice getting to know both JP and Louis and Ella?
Shanice was an only child for the longest time. So it was a little bit different for her, I think, just meeting JP. I think she got along really well with him. They had a really good relationship. She was younger, you know, she was a teenager at that time, mm-hmm. and I think she talked with him a lot and they talked with each other, and that was really nice. And then Louis and Ella, she had, you know, at school she had seen them as well, and then once JP and I started seeing each other, and once it became like public knowledge, the kids would come and spend weekends with us and all of that, so she got to interact with them as well.
Okay. And did you all move over to the US together, or did you come separately?
We came separately. The kids moved with their mother, who lives in Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea about the move was that their mom had decided she wants to relocate back to the US, And it just so happened that JP's work was going to bring him back to the U.S. as well, to any part of the U.S. She decided that she wanted to live in Washington, D.C., in this area, which was fine with JP because he could negotiate with his former employer to say, okay, I can move back to the U.S., but I would like to be located in the D.C. area so I could be closer to the kids. So she moved earlier on with the kids and settled them into school and all of that, and then JP moved. And then 6 months later, Shanice and I moved.
Okay. And where does JP work?
He worked for a telecommunications company, which is based in Florida.
Okay.
And at the moment, he's between jobs. He's in transition.
Okay. So describe your emotions during the process of getting your citizenship.
Gosh, I was trying to, like, communicate with different people who had gone through the process, like former friends from Thailand who now got remarried living in the US, Facebook friends, and saying, you know, asking them, like, so what's, you know, is it difficult? Like, what's the process? And, you know, and then pretty much the information I got was, like, it's easy. All you have to do is just learn from the book, you know. 100 questions, you'll be asked 10 out of the 100. So basically it was American history that I had to go back and learn about, which I had not learned about before, so that was a good learning experience for me. It caused some anxiety for me because I just felt like, what if I don't know everything that they asked me, and you know, and all of that. But it all worked out in the end. You know, I went and listened to the CD every day in my car to practice all the questions and answers and all of that, and yeah, it all worked out well. So I was anxious at the beginning, and once it happened, I was like, great, it wasn't so bad.
Right. And when did you get your citizenship?
About a year ago.
About a year ago.
Yeah.
So after you got your citizenship, did you notice kind of like a shift in your relationship to the U.S.?
Oh, definitely, especially when I wanted to travel to Europe, because having a South African passport was, I had to get a visa. I had to make a visa application, and you had to do it well in advance if you wanted to travel. And my sister is married to a Frenchman, the one who lives in Thailand, and they have a home in France. So every year I visit them. But the application process to go get a visa was, you had to pay a lot of money, you had to stand in a line, you had to fill in all the paperwork, and it was a long and tedious procedure.
Right.
And once I got my U.S. passport, it just, travel for me suddenly became much more painless.
Right.
So I just joined the line and went in, and you know, when I traveled with my U.S. passport last year, it was just amazing. Just, you know, 10 seconds at the immigration, they just stamped it, and so it kind of opened up a whole new world for me, I think.
So do you hold a Thai passport as well?
No, just South African.
Okay.
And then now the U.S. passport.
Does Shanice have a Thai passport?
No. Okay. She always traveled on her South African passport, and hopefully by the end of the year she will have her new passport, because she's gonna have her citizenship interview in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Okay. Are there any, you know, as we kind of wrap up the interview, are there any notable stories from your childhood that you'd like to share? Anything that stands out above, you know, the rest? Any memories?
Anything relating to the immigration part, or
just any stories from your childhood? You know, favorite memories.
Okay, well, favorite memories, I have to say, is just hanging out. We have a huge extended family. So every, you know, usually when it's, when I was an international school teacher, Christmas was like our favorite time to travel back to South Africa, because in international schools, we usually get 2 to 3 weeks holiday, just because most teachers want to go back to their home country. So for me, going back to South Africa in December was just amazing, because it's summer in South Africa, and it's just a very festive mood. It's the Rainbow Nation. Everyone, whether you are Indian, white, colored, black, everyone celebrates Christmas in South Africa. It's just, and you know, it's a holiday for everyone. So shopping is hectic, but then everything closes on Christmas Day, and people get to spend time with their families. So, so traveling to South Africa in December was just fantastic for Shanice and myself. Now that I'm here in the US, I would love to go back every year in December just because it is winter here, and mm-hmm. I would love to get away from the winter and go back to a nice warm place, except that we get like 2 weeks holiday when it's Christmas now at my new school, so right. it's just not enough time to spend all that money to travel all the way to South Africa mm-hmm. just for such a short time. So last year I did go, though. I think we made a trip in December, just a quick trip to visit my family, and my dad wasn't too well, so it was a good chance to go and spend time with them and see them,
right.
see everyone. But yeah, I love hanging out with my extended family. It's a bit overwhelming at times because we don't see them so often. Now it's probably like once a year that Shanice and I get to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And Shanice doesn't travel every year to South Africa now. She used to when I worked at international schools, but now that she's more independent, she sometimes has her own travel plans.
Right.
So I think I just loved that about being in South Africa, and just, you know, I miss all the South African products, you know, that we can buy over the counter, just little things that I grew up eating, special biscuits and
yeah.
and chips and all of those things. But now we are trying to find stores like here that sell some international products. So some of the things that we were not available here, now suddenly when I'm in a store, sometimes I look and I see like, oh, look, there's the chocolate. That's Cadbury's from South Africa. And now right. we have it here. So, and whenever JP's at a store and he sees something familiar that I would love to have, then he would buy it so we could right. have it here. And then, as I mentioned, in Thailand, my fondest memories are just hanging out with my sister and her family mm-hmm. and being with my niece and nephew, who are now the same age as Lewis and Ella.
Okay.
So they were babies when they were in Thailand, and now they are just all grown up and teenagers and
yeah.
taller than I am. But I get to see them whenever I go to France, which is nice, so I still feel like connected to them. But my most memorable memories of being in Thailand would be just hanging out on weekends with them or going to some nice places to eat, and all the lovely food that in Thailand, like we all love Thai food, so that's one of the things we would do. And
mm-hmm.
we had help. My sister has a Sri Lankan helper who just cooks lovely Thai food, went for Thai cooking classes. I just loved out shopping on the streets, all the things that were like so cheap on the streets, clothes, and you could buy anything, food and clothes, just walking along the main roads in Bangkok or any side roads. And then coming to the US, it was a shock for me to walk into stores and to see how expensive the things are. I would always convert, in my mind, I was always converting, how much did this cost in Thailand? And then how much is it here? It's like sometimes 10 times more in price, you know, mm-hmm. the clothes that I would buy. So I was so grateful that I bought a lot of clothes while I was in Thailand. So when I came here, I would walk into stores and look at the price tag and go like, no, I could actually get this much cheaper in Thailand.
Right.
So that was one of the big differences for me. Just even going out to eat in a restaurant, at a Thai restaurant here, the prices are 10 times more than you would pay for the same thing in Thailand.
Yeah.
So for me, those were like big culture shocks, mm-hmm. you know. So yeah, I guess when I go back to Thailand, I'll be eating a lot of Thai food and trying to enjoy a lot of that.
Yeah.
Because it's not so affordable here.
Right.
Yeah.
How does the Thai food here compare to the Thai food in Thailand?
Well, we've been looking for like more authentic Thai restaurants, so mm-hmm. we always try different places when we see it. But like one of the things we always say to them is like, if we order a meal, we love spicy food. And even though we say to them we want it spicy, it's never comes spicy. We always have to ask for more chili on the side or, right. or whatever. So now I started saying to people when we go to a restaurant, like, we used to live in Thailand, so we ate really spicy food, so can you please make it spicy?
Right.
It's not the same. Obviously, it's not the same as Thailand, even though it might be I'm sure it's a Thai person preparing the food. Mm-hmm. They just go much easier on the chili part of it. It's a little more bland when they make the food. So, you know, often JP carries chilies in his pocket so he can just kind of put it on the side and he can like chew on it to make it a little more spicy. But right. Yeah, it's different.
Okay. So is there anything else you'd like to tell me before we finish up?
No, I just feel like it's been a great experience, you know, growing up and living in South Africa, and then
mm-hmm.
moving to Thailand was just great because my sister lived there for so long and she's still living there. But just having family there made a big difference to me. I think if I was just all alone and I didn't have family, it would have been really hard to fit in. But having her already there made my transition so much easier. And then meeting JP in Thailand and, you know, embarking on a new life, thinking about moving to the US was something that I had not considered until I met him. And then I just feel like this is now a new chapter in my life and in Shanice's life. And, you know, I love my new job and everything seems to be going well. Right. So, yeah, I think I'm happy to be here.
Okay.
Though I miss my family.
Right. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're most welcome. Okay.